Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, May 9th, 2019. It's 9:01 a.m. County Administration Workshop in the Board of County Commissioner Conference Room. First up is Department of Business Information Technology. First one is our discussion of the Microsoft renewal and then the Ann Basker equipment upgrade. Morning, sir.
Good morning, commissioners.
Oh, we're having everyone introduce themselves for the record.
John McCafferty, IT Director, or Technology Director.
Thanks, sir.
This is the Microsoft renewal. 10 years ago, we signed what is called an enterprise agreement. Every 3 years, it gets renewed. And, of course, the costs do not go down. They tend to go up. What the three-year contract does is freeze our costs unless we grow, unless we add employees. This contract that I'm asking you to designate Commissioner Morgan to sign is to renew for 3 years our agreement with Microsoft for machines for Microsoft Office and for server licensing. The cost this year for our Microsoft licensing was $93,000. $35,000 of that was due to a true-up, increased employees that we've hired over the last 18 months. This contract is for $112,000. It also is a change a little bit in licensing.
So it almost doubled?
No, it
went 2 years ago?
Well, we had $58,000 in licensing costs for the employees that we had at the beginning of 3 years ago.
Okay, when you add employees, it's by, like, do they do that in chunks of 10 employees or something?
No, we tell every year exactly how many new employees we added.
We pay per license.
Okay.
But, so I'm curious how the 365 works. I'm not as familiar with that one. Is there any negatives to us?
So as far as the what the employee sees, they'll see exactly the same thing that they see now. The difference between Office 365, what this model is using, is it's per user. So if a user has Exchange on their phone, they get their email on their phone, and they get their email on a tablet, and they get their email at home, it's no extra licensing. It's per user. The old model was per machine.
Well, that's a pretty good leap in service without any addition, because it stays, the employee can do so much more with it than before, but they're not going to charge for it only as an employee.
Right. And Microsoft realizes that this is the way the world is going. What Office 365 also does is to start to move us towards the cloud. If our servers are down, you will still be able to get to your documents as long as you have internet. We're going to be moving to what's called Exchange Online instead of us having a server where all our emails are kept online in the 200 D Street building. We will be moving to having it there and in the cloud so that regardless of where you are or what the conditions are back here, you'll be able to get to your email. There is a value to our continuity of operations plan. Easy for me to say. So this changes our model a little bit. It is an increase in costs, but Microsoft is moving away from the model that we had, and they've increased the cost of the old model such that it makes it extremely easy to move over to Office 365. They're basically pricing the old model out so that you are kind of forced to move to the Office 365 anyway, and there are advantages for us. Any other questions?
It is what it is. We can't function without it.
Sounds like one of those.
And I think we've been very fortunate with the agreement we had because it put the county kind of at the cusp of always having the most current version of all the software, which is kind of neat because I'd run into other counties who weren't doing the same thing. And so it was one of the few times I'm like, wow, we're kind of ahead of the curve here. And I appreciated it from somebody who uses it a lot.
Well, and that's what the industry's telling us all to do. And mm-hmm. so it's whether to get on board beginning, middle, or end.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Are you looking for an approval on this today?
I'm asking for you to approve that you as chair can sign this agreement. There's a single
space. Do you need
space.
A motion to that?
Probably. I'd approve a motion approving the licensing and for the chair to sign on behalf.
Yes, I make that motion.
Yep, and I'll second that.
Any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries 3-0.
The second contract I have in front of you, legal has signed off on. It is the contract to work with Design Sound Northwest to upgrade our sound and video at Ann Basker. The new cameras were taken out of the proposal, so it went from $84,000 to $77,793. It's on page 9 of 9. So legal signed off on it. I've looked over the statement of work and the equipment that are contained herein, and we're satisfied with it. We have one question into the vendor for the installation of the speakers that I think was inadvertently left out of this, and I've asked for an email to specifically say that the installation of the speakers is included. The speakers are included themselves. It does not specifically say
we're installed,
but it's installing everything.
We're just going to set them in the room, see if something
right.
miraculous
yeah, exactly.
happens.
Exactly.
Keep them in the box.
I just wanted, in case you had a question, that it's we're addressing that.
Are they recessed speakers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does it mean that it changes anything as far as in the bids and everything
no,
else?
No cost okay. changes. I think it was just inadvertent, or I haven't read it correctly.
One of the things on our whiteboard is streaming pictorial on the screen in a conference room at Ann Basker before meetings. Over at Curry County, when I was over there, just at for people sitting in the audience rather than staring at four blank walls, they had a streaming, almost an advertisement for Curry County. And I think we'll get with Jason and maybe put something together like that, that no matter what's going on over there, prior to the meeting, you could have something streaming kind of as a calming device.
Information.
Right, yeah. Just kind of an informational yeah. thing. And, you could even use it for upcoming events and whatnot.
Well, they've been putting the agenda on this one. I mean, if you want a second screen in here on that side for folks, we can put the same things or put one. It's basically just a computer program, and you have a screensaver going that has the information or a
well, it was pretty comprehensive, and they could change it as they want. And then when the meeting comes up, that went away and the agenda came up. Doesn't mean another screen. I'm not saying add anything, but I just know if this system over here, this proposed system, has that capability.
So it exactly does. What it does is we'll have a control panel in the back and a control panel at the recorder's desk, which will allow different video inputs to go to the outputs, the
okay.
screens. So the way we conceived it would be exactly to address your concern is Jason's going to work on content, and we
okay.
will be able to stream that content to the television, for instance.
Okay.
And have the agenda on the right screen, turn it off, turn it on, based on what you want to see.
Okay, all right, good. It was on the board, and I just have a glance over to see it, so that's super.
And will this enhance our ability to have call-in participation?
It includes a VoIP.
Voice-over internet?
Voice, very good.
Nicely
voice-over
done.
connectivity, so that if you can talk to a phone, it will be integrated both on the ability for a commissioner to hear and to speak.
Right, so it won't go through a microphone like I did last
night. It was
night,
a little clumsy last night, but it was surprising
it
how
worked.
Clear it was.
Your voice came in.
In
clear,
fact, at
but
one
you
time,
couldn't hear.
I could hear you two, but I couldn't hear the
right,
podium.
Right, because you're relying on my microphone,
yeah.
and I
yeah.
couldn't catch
yeah.
them.
But right. it was so much better than when I tried calling in the last time, and I was down by the recorder's desk, because all I could hear was them typing. And I
right.
couldn't hear you guys or the podium. And
no,
thus,
so at least you could hear us.
For the audience, it worked out well. And
yeah.
in fact, I included you in the meeting once I went.
Yeah, Dan did the animation.
I got a laugh, except Wally didn't find it funny, but the camera was on him. Cameras on there. We're not supposed to joke around at WVS meetings.
Right.
But everybody else got a kick out of it.
Well, you were the only other.
But thank you, because I wanted my name on the signature lines on both those
which
proposals.
I think is good.
It worked out well.
Yeah. My only other question was, it'd be nice to have a monitor of the outgoing signal. I don't know if that can be done without delay before it goes to whoever.
We think we can build that ourselves. Yeah. So we have right now a TV in the back room that we can see the broadcast.
Right.
We just have to put that feed on your desk.
It's at least a 30-second delay.
No, what Commissioner Fowler is talking about is to actually see not the stream or the TV broadcast, but the actual content that the camera is seeing,
is collecting,
which we can monitor now, but we have to move it to the front desk.
Right, which I think would be nice.
They have it at the recorder's desk, and they can watch it over here. I think Nicole's watched from over here before what's going
on. I stream it on YouTube.
Oh, you stream it? Never mind.
So you're delayed. Right?
So we can change that so that...
Well, and I'm at the point I can't see the back projector very well anymore.
Right, but this should improve some of that.
The screen should improve it quite a bit.
Yeah, and then if we had the closer monitor, we'd be able to see what was up on that far, far screen, too.
Now, what they have suggested is that we do something about the lighting over the back screen, because you got that much distance. If it's brightly lit close to the screen,
it'll white it out.
It's white screen
it
pick out. Up the light.
Good electrician could fix that, no
but
problem.
Exactly. If we knew one, we'd.
If we could find one. Is there anyone left?
But the screens are light reflective.
Better quality.
Better quality.
Right.
So this 78,000, is that consistent with what? Did they give us an estimate? And then there's.
We got multiple.
Okay, we've had. We had two people. We add and subtract stuff.
Labor was never brought before the board. The equipment came in very close to what I brought to the board 2 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the installation was part of the bid process. We had two bids, one from Delta AV and one from Design Sound Northwest.
Well, we finish that door approach and replace this equipment, that place will be much better public access as well as...
I'm counting on it. I think citizen experience is going to be greatly enhanced.
I hope so. Yeah. But, I mean, if we're doing the investment, that's the whole point.
It is.
Pretty rough. You know, just an example. We go to Cave Junction. I wish we had some of this stuff. Because, you know, smaller
much smaller
venue,
room, yeah.
But, boy, it's pretty nice setup. So.
Yep. It's time for us to play catch up.
So this has to go to weekly business session, right?
It's up to the board, I think. I'm not sure whether it works.
So over 50.
Well, it just requires all three of us to sign.
Yeah.
Okay. But is it budgeted?
It is not budgeted.
So it requires us to take it to weekly business.
Okay, so I'll get it on next Wednesday.
Thank you.
Okay.
Very good, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for your efforts. All right. Next is airports with a grant agreement number COAR 2019-3S8-0066.
Good morning.
Between
morning,
Oregon sir. Department of Aviation and Josephine County for Grants Pass Airport Resiliency Study.
Larry Graves, Director of Airports. I bring you more money. This is
outside in money.
Yep. This is an effort by the state of Oregon to assess all of our readiness to support the community in the event of an emergency of some kind, you know, floods, fires, earthquakes, whatever it might be. And so this grant will pay for the task order 6 by Precision Approach Engineering, which we've already approved, and that contains, administration and engineering assessments of building physical structures, the ability to withstand earthquakes, the basic readiness of the airport at Grants Pass to perform in an emergency.
How do they check to see if the runway is going to remain intact? We have a big ripple effect, and we've seen bridges going like this for pieces.
I've seen it myself personally. Lived in California quite a while. I was standing on the ramp when there was a large earthquake in the Bay Area and watched the runway and the concrete just rippling like jello. It was kind of creepy, but it's a reality. And we're part of this task order that Precision Approach Engineering will be performing is called a geotechnical survey. So they'll have a subcontractor come in and they'll use all kinds of different devices to characterize the soils and the substructure underneath the runway and the ramp areas, and make a fairly accurate prediction as to what might happen in the event of one of two or three different types of earthquakes. You know, we have sudden jolts, we have rolling earthquakes, we have, you know, all kinds of different interesting things that can happen.
And that's all in the study?
It's all in the study, yeah. So this is a $67,500 grant going toward an estimated $70,000 maximum project cost, and our output from the department will be $7,500, our match.
Another high leverage.
Fairly high.
Yeah. Gotta like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Sounds like
a questions.
Easy go.
Great. Well, I would simply ask that the board approve this grant at the next weekly business session, and
that's where it needs
move
to
forward. Okay.
Needs to move forward. Sounds okay. Good.
And I can be there or not at your pleasure.
Can probably take it. You write me up, just tap me up a little bit, something like that. I can be right off of here as far as that goes.
Great. Very good.
Pretty yep. Straightforward.
Keep you writing the next grant.
Yeah. Already,
come
already
to
got
a
the applications in.
That's right.
So, okay. Good. Thank you
very
much.
Good. Thanks, Larry.
Next up is economic development request for the Murphy Ditch Irrigation Improvement, an amount of $10,000. It's actually the finance report. So Arthur's coming up. Then equipment reserve request, RFP for finance system software, and a distinguished budget presentation award. Mm-hmm. Morning, sir.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. Arthur O'Hara, finance director. So in your packet, you have a copy of the request for economic development funds for the Murphy Ditch Irrigation Improvement. Going through it, the project itself is the first phase. There will be a second phase. This phase is to develop the alternatives, to look at the alternatives and decide which one they want to move forward with. The cost is $98,000. The request is $10,000, so approximately 10%. Of the cost. They have a $75,000 grant from the state to help with this project. And although the project looks like the main point of it is fish habitat, to protect the salmon runs and to improve those kinds of conditions on the creek, there was at least the Applegate River, at least one of the objectives was to improve the efficiencies and the access to irrigation, which is a more direct tie to economic development as far as that goes, for the users of the Murphy Ditch. So I don't know if we've had a chance to, or I don't know if the board has had a chance to discuss this project or to.
I've never even heard of it. News that it's even.
Is
coming
this a
to
gravity us. Irrigation system?
We might. I do not know that.
Do we have a map in here anywhere?
Or how many property
is this
owners?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know stuff?
I'll come up if you like.
Yeah, come on up, Larry.
You know stuff?
I know you're on the board for the Two Rivers Soil and Water District.
So,
38 users. Oh, there's my answer for one. How many
Larry
people?
Ford. I am on the board of directors for Two Rivers Soil and Water Conservation District. This is a multi-stage project. We are. We think what's going to happen eventually is we'll pipe the whole ditch. It's 3.8 miles on the main ditch. It's a little over a mile in the 9-day ditch, which is a feeder ditch off the Murphy ditch. It will be, the reason we're including fish habitat is because there is a dam there that has a fish ladder. ODF&W is very interested in this project. They came on board really early. They will work with the improvement on the fish ladder if it's necessary. So
I'm just curious, the funding opportunities that the soil district has, do you guys have a tax base?
No, we are ran solely on grants and money from the State of Oregon.
So the irrigation benefiters don't pay anything?
They will have. Said right now, for the engineering work, which is the first phase, the maximum we could get is $75,000. So the difference to the nearly $100,000, $98,000 is in-kind work, money from the Murphy Ditch, and then this economic development grant will make that difference. Past there, once the engineering of this work is done, there will be a second and actually probably a third phase, and those will be grants also. We're working with Applegate's Watershed Council on this. They kind of have the expertise on these projects, so we're teaming with them.
Do they have any funding opportunities to join in with you guys?
They're the ones that are helping write the grants. They're like us. They're kind of, you know, they don't have a tax base.
Mm-hmm.
But they have the expertise in which grants to write and how to write them.
So are you going to come back to the county with another ask for phase two and three, or do you think it'll be 100% grant funded at that point?
At this point, I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard there'll be a 10% match, and I've heard there won't be any match at all. It depends on the granting agencies, and unfortunately, they come from the federal government, and they change yearly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This year is 100%.
The criteria shuffle.
Yes.
Yeah.
How many water and soil districts are there in Josephine County?
Two.
Where's the other one?
Ivy.
Okay.
The county is split 50-50 north-south. Ivy's on the west side. We're on the east side. Every county in the country has a soil water district. Some have more than one. We're lucky we have two. Why, I don't know. Soil water districts were started because of the Dust Bowl. FDR started it. It was going to be a federally run project. After about a year, he figured out that it didn't work. So he went to all the states, the governors, asked them to go ahead and petition the counties to put these conservation districts in. So that's how we started in 1950. That was our.
It's odd that there is a soil and water conservation district, but yet in Eastern Oregon, if a guy wants to dam up a drain off between that comes down through his property so he can use that water in the summertime to irrigate his crops, he's not allowed to.
Oh, we have the same thing here. Yeah, it's because the water belongs to the state.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So it's not actually a conservation district.
Well, no, our conservation districts actually have nothing to do with that. We work with farmers and ranchers, mostly some inner city, to make sure that you're using the right, you know, chemicals on your property. We work on water improvement projects. For a lot of years, when the Title III grants were available, we did fuels reductions all over the county. A lot of the fuels reductions you see up there, we were one of the ones that started working on the FireWise. Because of personnel changes, we're no longer involved in that, but we were on the ground floor when that started. So
when you're going to say you're going to pipe all 3.5 miles of this, is there a stormwater element that you will go away if you pipe it?
That's what our engineers will tell us. We don't know.
The irrigation district, Grass Pass Irrigation District,
yeah,
is an integral part of the stormwater program in the city of Grass Pass.
Yeah.
That's, a lot of stuff goes to those ditches.
That's why the first phase is an engineering project. They will assess the whole ditch. We will have community involvement. We'll get together. There are some people that have the ditch across their property, but they don't have water rights. We'll talk with those people. There are some concerns about groundwater.
That's the next question, because those leaky old ditches actually feed the aquifer.
Well, in our case, out here in Murphy Ditch, we have a lot of soil that's very granitic. So we're losing a lot of water where we don't want it to go. I mean, it is.
Okay.
So we'll hope, and this is what the engineers will tell us, is whether that's the right. We think it is, but we're not sure.
I guess their argument would be that they are going to reduce the amount of water that you're taking out of the Applegate River because it's not soaking into the soil.
Right.
You're only, yeah, okay.
And all of that, the water that returns at the end of the 3 and almost 4 mile ditch will be colder and cleaner when it goes back into the Applegate.
Because it won't be taken on, runoff from the pastures and the dope fields and all that.
Sunshine and all
ditches
that.
And the Murphy ditch is fairly shallow, so the water warms. Puts warm water back into the Applegate instead of
You could pipe that across that golf course and save me a ton of money in golf balls.
Okay. Well, that's one of the things that he wants that left open. And we'll see about that.
Does.
But the main ditch doesn't go out in the golf course. It goes along the road.
Yeah, it goes along the road.
Yeah, so that's what the project is.
Okay,
all right. I love it.
I don't have any more questions.
And it looks like a pretty high leverage for benefit. Mm-hmm. So I'm not against it.
Let's hear from finance, I think.
We have a little over $300,000 in budget still, and about a little over $100,000 in cash in the economic development fund.
We can absorb this without
depleting
anything.
And we're anticipating one more quarterly deposit before the end of the year. So,
what do we do, Chairman? Is this a motion?
It probably is, and it could be. My only question is past precedents with other districts, and where the history is between funding from county for the soil district. And I just am curious. I would like some more background. I think for today supporting this, but I also am concerned about setting a precedence for, does this mean the counties are responsible for funding state-run organizations?
Yeah.
So that would be my concern.
I would think also to single it out to say this one doesn't have a funding source at all. DPID has an annual fee. I don't know, Fort Benoit District. They're part of DPID, Fort Benoit Irrigation District out there?
I'm not sure.
I don't think so. But that's a
separate.
I'm not really sure. I know where their pumps come out of the road.
I just didn't know if, this is a one-shot deal. I'm assuming that we're not signing on for $7,500 a year or $10,000 a year. Just a one-shot deal to get this project done.
Get it started.
I have no problem. But Chris, can we have a little bit of breathing room?
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, the grant's been submitted. It will go to committee, I believe, next month, and the work won't start until after irrigation system.
Okay, but are they calling you saying, do you have the match?
No, not yet.
All right, so I think we've got time to look up what your concerns are.
Are you afraid the Illinois Valley Watershed Council is going to come in and ask for $10,000?
I would like to find out what other counties are doing, what the relationships are, what the states, if there's state subdivisions, where's their funding? I trust you, Larry.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of that.
I certainly understand. And if you need any contacts, I have them at the office from the state. Beth Petrzek is probably our contact person at the state.
Yeah.
So if you want any of that, I'll get it all for you, whatever you need it.
Awesome. I'd like to see if we can come up with anything internally too to see what kind of history there. But just for the sake of more knowledge, that would be my request, just that we can get some more background and understanding. And
it's not unreasonable.
Well, we certainly appreciate it because it's a project that I think that have a lot of benefits, but if you need anything you need, let me know.
Thank you. I don't know. I'm going to put it on Arthur to get us some background information.
Okay.
What? I heard noise about removing the Applegate Dam.
No. Well, that's a whole other ball of wax. There are some people out there that have a continually evolving idea to remove all the dams in every river in the state of Oregon. Actually, on the West Coast. Applegate Dam is on that hit list, but there were like 15. And there's two dams that are being removed now on the upper part of the Rogue River on some of the feeders. What we're hoping is, especially with ODF and W on board, is we won't remove this dam. We may modify it, and that's what ODF and W will tell us. Second fish ladder, we don't know. Their engineers are already working on that. and to keep this dam in place. It's been there for a long time. It serves a very good function. It doesn't impede any movement on the river. So,
do they irrigate off that dam?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have. There's 38 people on the main ditch, and then there, I think there's 9 or 12 on the 9A ditch.
Well, and that's the Murphy Creek one. This one.
Yeah.
Is there another district that feeds off of the dam itself?
Applegate Dam.
No. Yeah. Okay.
The dam is right there below the bridge on Williams Highway when you cross just before you get.
That's the Murphy grid. This Murphy Dam is right below
there. Right, you can see that to your right as you're driving across. Right. Yeah. Right, okay.
Now, the one upstream used to be a irrigation ditch, but it's no longer, it's above.
Now it's just a flood control
dam. Applegate Dam itself does not have an irrigation element.
No, Applegate Dam.
That's what I meant, It's
just water storage.
Yeah, flood control and water storage, yeah.
And recreation.
Thank you.
This is a beautiful lake. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, sir.
So I will do some background research to see what other support that our county has provided in years gone by, and then I'll work with Mr. Ford to maybe get some contact information at the state and see what other soil and water conservation district supports have been received. Something of that nature.
Yep. Sounds good.
Get back to the board.
Thank you. I would be curious, this next one is a curious topic for me, especially with the time frame of how recently we replaced the software and why we're here again so soon.
So for background on that regard, we signed the contract with Springbrook in October 2012 after a RFP process and demonstrations and bids and so on and so forth. We selected Springbrook in October of 2012. So that, from that perspective, we're looking at approximately 7-year lifespan. Average lifespan of financial software is from anywhere from 7 to 10 years. That's the average. Our last software we had, which was called MIP, and that was taken over by Acela, was we had that for over 20 years, I believe. So it was well
that's why this is a concern. And how do we in this process don't repeat this in 5 years?
This isn't
a software supposed to last 20 years.
I can almost say, I'm just going to throw this out there, you can expect everything to expire way earlier than what we're used to.
That's true.
Refrigerators used to last a lifetime. Now and then they last 20 years. Now they last 10 years. Same thing with television sets, everything else. And plus in technology, in this part of the thing, the technology is moving so fast that instead of it being, they said 7 to 10, we're at 7. The next one's going to be 5 before it's updated and we're moving at the speed of light. So I don't find a concern in that. I see what you're saying, Commissioner, but, across the board, I used to put a heat pump in, it was going to be 20 years. Then it was 15 years. Then it's 10 years. And when I got out of the business, it's about 6 to 7, and you're out another $10,000. And I don't like that concept, but that's the way it is.
Well, and partly what's happening with this specific situation here, I would have liked it to last a little bit longer, because then it'd be Sandy's responsibility to implement. But if
how much longer is
that? I'm just saying. No timetables on this, but I'm just saying.
I will say I have heard that the Springbrook has not been as good of a system.
What happened, so we signed in October of 2012.
And not as detailed. You can't actually see where things are going. You can't line item. You can't track as well.
The grant tracking is poor. The integration with our time and attendance is poor. The human resource module never really functioned, especially applicant tracking, never functioned the way that, of course, the salesman said that it would. So I've talked with some of the previous salesmen that used to work for Springbrook. When Springbrook was taken over by their, when Springbrook was bought out, after we had signed the contract, they were bought out, and since that time, they have lost approximately 80 customers around this region. Their service went downhill. Their support went downhill. It was a very poorly executed buyout, they're trying to turn things around, but they're not doing a great job in doing that yet.
Usually buyouts are meant to things get better.
Yeah. No, this one, I actually have an email from them from probably last year. So it took several years, but they said, I have an email from Acela saying, I'm sorry, we screwed up. We really fell down on the job. You know, we're going to try to make it better. We still have not received contact from them to get a quote of what an upgrade might be or a replacement might be from Springbrook, which is unfathomable to me that a salesman has not jumped all over that. But as I pointed out in this, we've had 7 requests in over the last several years, and they're just unable to respond because of their poor approach. So normally, no, I would not have a replacement request in here, but because of this, what I'll call unusual circumstance, I'm feeling we're put in a corner.
Have you reached out? I mean, I guess my reference is Angie Brown. I mean, she worked for you, and then she worked over there, and so from her perspective, having worked in your office and the level of detail she understands, she would be an asset in my mind of giving you feedback of things to make sure included on what you're looking for next. Do you you reached out to those type of folks in the departments?
Correct. Actually, we have, and Angie is one of the folks that would one of the reasons why we really need to replace this, because the grant accounting, which Angie's very very much involved in, is so poor within Springbrook. She's having to do more work with Springbrook than what she used to do with our old MIP system, in order to track and report back on grants. So it's not supposed to be that way. It's supposed to be more efficient. The newer products, of course, we're going to look at and make sure that they provide the full spectrum of service that modern financial software does provide, including grant modules, including the cash receipting, including public access. That's a big thing now. OpenGov to have basically what it does is takes a picture of what software you have or what your status is and puts it out on in a more static form so that public can access that and run ad hoc reports against your financials. So they can see it. They don't have to ask. They don't have to put in a public records request necessarily. They can do it on their own, and that's very popular and very prevalent in the newer softwares. What this request is actually the request just to develop the request for proposals and to get requests for proposals back from the potential vendors. What would happen after this is that we would then go through the selection process, set up demonstrations, you know, have groups, teams, Angie, Lori, Eve, the various participants in this that are heavy users, big users, be involved with the demonstrations and evaluations of the various vendors. And then based on that, then I would come back to the board with an actual request for a contract. So I anticipate that will actually be a many-month project. So I would think if everything went just super well, we would be looking at probably August for demonstrations and selection process. August, September for signing a contract, implementation. When I talked to Tyler Tech, who's doing our tax and assessment system, and their financial product is called Munis, when I talked to them, they were saying a 24-month implementation is about average. So we'd be looking at not, you know, not 2019, but 2020, 21 for an actual implementation. So it's out there quite a ways, but it's a good time to get started on the process. So that's what I'm looking for, I guess, today is to that approval to say, let's start the process. We can't implement right away because the IT is pretty much tied up with the tax and assessment implementation downstairs for the assessor and the tax folks.
Is there a requirement of that software to integrate with anybody else's?
Right. We want to, that's one of the criteria that it will integrate. It doesn't necessarily have to be the same vendor, Tyler, but Tyler is a very strong contender. Tyler is the one who's buying other people.
Yeah, they're buying up other businesses. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily fixing everything yet, though.
Yeah. So they, Munis, Grants Pass installed Munis a couple years ago. I talked with Jay Meredith about that, and the implementation was not very pleasant. Implementation was a hassle, but he says now that we've gone through that, the product itself is working well. So I don't know any implementation that's wonderful.
Yeah, you can't get the company that is our existing, Springbrook, to offer you any upgrades, and so now we have to go cold turkey to another.
We're stuck at version 7.16, which is what was installed back in, 2014. What we signed on for in 2012, yes. And then their actual implementation started in October of 2013. A year later, it took for them to get to it. And then we went live January 1 of 14. So January 1 of 14 is when we went live. Yeah. And we haven't... part of the problem is they're saying that they cannot upgrade our version. So there's no continuous... And part of my original point of working with them was that we're not going to be customized. We're going to use what you provide off the shelf, out of the box, so that we can keep up, so that we can be, have the latest and greatest as we move along. And that's not what has happened. But then again, they got bought out just shortly after we implemented, and the whole
system. Doesn't sound like our history with them is good.
I'm sure that they will submit a proposal, and we will look at their proposal with objective and candid eyes. Yes.
Okay. So what do you need from us today?
So today, what I would request is that I get approval from the board saying yes, go forth, get an RFP put together, get it out there, and see what responses we get. So that'll be a multi-month project before we finalize anything. Like I said, probably I'll come back to you folks if all things go well, probably in the first part of next fiscal year, so July, August.
I would entertain a motion based on whatever you guys' preferences are. I'm not going to say what you should do.
You two are the...
I don't think Springbrook is a good program.
Yeah, I want to go out.
I will say it out loud. He can be politically correct.
You beat around it long enough.
I'm going to be blunt.
Clarification. I make a motion that he goes and puts an RFP out.
Yeah, I'd second that.
You know, to upgrade what we got. I don't like doing it at a 7-year itch, but guess what? I understand it. I understand how business.
I know it's technology. 20 years is not the same as what ago. Yeah, it's not the same as it's. It's half life
so
is
much faster.
Yeah. Always a half life. I get that. It's outdated the moment you have it.
More and more we're going to subscription based.
And
not buying a box
software
full
as a
of
service. But
yeah, and that's the industry.
And that might be one of the options we look
that
at.
Come up.
So that could be rather than hosting it local. The IT guys love to host stuff local because that's their bread and butter. That's what they love doing. They like having a big
server. Well, is finance different? Do we want to keep that
donuts and iced tea
close to the vest?
I think there's a lot of differences of opinion. I know even within my own office, people don't like the cloud. They don't like being dependent on the internet. Uh-huh. They want it. They want to keep something in our local network.
That's not how any software system's going these days. Look at what we just heard from John.
It's kind of old school. It's keeping your landline.
Yeah.
I think it will create something that's very vulnerable in the future. I think everybody going on the cloud creates something that's very single point. You reach over, shut the cloud off, and everything stops.
Yep. And that's a concern.
Makes it a terrorist target.
Let's face it, the days of carrying around the local newspaper in your back pocket are gone. Now everybody's using a cell phone in their back pocket.
Yeah, it's for the birdcage like it used to be, the newspaper. Fish wrapper.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 3-0. We'll get that signed for you.
Okay, thank you.
Off and running.
And then the final point I have today is more of good news. We did receive the Government Finance Officers Association budget award. Once again, I wanted to bring that to the board's attention. This has been a project that Chris Carlson initiated 7 years ago. To take our budget book to that next level, to that next stage where it meets the criteria, advanced criteria and heightened criteria put forth by the National Organization for Governmental Accounting. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. It's part of your packet. You can see that they make a big deal out of it. So I wanted to bring out a couple of points. This is our 7th year in a row that we have been awarded this. We were awarded this on our first year, which is very unusual. It signifies how thorough Chris is and was to put together a document that would meet the criteria. And to be awarded, you must be proficient in 4 categories, and each category has 14 mandatory criteria. Within the categories. So it has to be a policy document, which is why we have goals and directives and require the programs and departments to express how they meet those goals and directives. So it's got to be a policy document, a financial plan, which is our 5-year plan. We'll beef that up quite a bit with the capital improvement plan. An operations guide, that is the monitoring of the budget itself, and a communication guide, meaning if you look at the beginning introductory section, we put in a lot of narrative for the public consumption of how the budget process works, who's involved in the budget process, and how the budget comes together. So it's it's an excellent program. Chris does an excellent job, and I'm just bragging a little bit on how she does it, on her work. So.
Isn't she also a local photographer?
She did take the picture of our budget cover
this
year's budget book. The only county park that's free, I think, is what Sarah.
Is what, yeah, Matson.
That's the free one. So that is what I brought forward to.
Well, congratulations on 7 years in a row. That's a big deal.
It is.
Yep. I know the city over there is sitting on like 22 or 25 years in a row. We're second most in the state.
Wow.
And so that is very cool that our county has got on board with that program.
Yeah, and it's...
We might have Jason do a press release on that to that effect. That'd
yeah.
Because budget time is here.
That's a good idea.
Only 169 counties in the states are... receive this award. So if you think about that, we've got 19,000 members of the GFOA, 1,600 participants in the budget award, and 169 counties. So we are one of those 169.
That's good.
A lot of cities, of course, that are part of that. Mm-hmm. But very, very proud of Chris.
Yeah, they finally stopped giving individual awards and started putting 10 dates on one award because we were getting too many. What a great problem to have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions or
for me?
Thoughts? Okay, yeah. I appreciate your help.
Should we recognize this at a WBS? Chris,
I know that was one of my thoughts. Get the word out.
It's you could. You know, it's a little. I think it's a great thing. I made it part of the budget message last night or Tuesday night. You know, Chris is a little reluctant to stand up in front and
take
be recognized, you know, yeah. for that. But
I got that.
I'd be willing to do that. Yeah. I'd be willing to yeah. put her on the spot. But
I am curious.
Yes.
What's the ratio of people who apply that don't get it?
Good question. I knew that answer about 4 or 5 years ago, but I don't remember right now.
Is there a ratio?
Yes.
I mean, I've been involved with two governments, and they both receive the awards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of applying, and they get it. So it's kind of one of those things that I...
Very, very rare for them to get it on their first application.
Right.
I mean, the criteria is there, and they outline what you need to do in order to have a valid budget document.
Yeah.
But from what I was reading, as I in the back of my mind, the majority don't make it
okay.
the first year.
But so, ongoing? I guess I'd
but
be curious.
Ongoing, yes.
Because for me, it's kind of like, okay, if you apply and everybody gets it, it's not that
yeah.
distinguished.
No, correct.
Three cars, two trophies.
Yeah. yeah.
But part of the benefit of this program.
Or two cars, three trophies. You
know? I got
best
two.
In show.
I got two trophies. So, but part of the benefit of this program, they send it to three folks throughout the country, three different individual other counties typically, who then take our budget document and grade it. And they report back to us, and we get that report card back as to whether we meet or don't meet all of the criteria, whether we're lacking in some areas, whether we need to come up to snuff in some areas. So it's not a static, we submit it and it's good and that's the end of the story. It's a continuous improvement process. So we're making changes, we're making updates and improvements every year on the budget document and on our financial statements based on the feedback we get from these three individuals around. And they rotate that. They give it to different folks. Sandy is actually participating and is one of the judges. Of course, she doesn't judge our own, but she's judged other financial statements from other entities around the United States and, you know, goes through the criteria, says whether it meets it or doesn't meet it, or here's something that you might consider to improve your presentation. We do the same thing with our budget document and make changes every year. So, yeah.
I have one other thing for
sure.
you. I kind of threw a wrench in a conversation the other day when I suggested that I thought moving risk management back under your department with property management.
Yeah, I heard that through the grapevine.
I knew you had. I'm just curious. You had risk management, or was it under Rosemary when you...
It was Rosemary. So part of the reorganization when Rosemary left was moving risk management mm-hmm. over to HR. So I think that's a toss-up. You know, there's municipalities that have it in finance. There's municipalities that have it in human resources. There's some that are, you know, an independent, if they're big enough, you know, a large enough entity, they'll have it as an independent thing. But yeah, so it's an organizational decision.
Your office has been very good about hiring a balanced approach. You mm-hmm. and Rosemary had different mm-hmm. personalities, different skill traits.
Right.
And you and Sandy
oh, yes.
do as well. So as far as personalities, as far as dynamics, you've done well with making sure that you have the full coverage there,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. which I appreciate about your department.
Thank you.
So, all right. Well, I'm just kind of curious, since I like wrenches. I have a lot of tools,
right.
you know.
So you're willing, you're not saying no?
Oh, I'm not saying yes either. So I just
want right, Switzerland, how's it going?
On all topics.
Yeah, you'll. I'm sure that you will discuss that and come to the right decision.
Awesome.
Well, it just puts a lob back over there.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on. Is there any other business that
nicely
should come before
played,
the board?
If
not,
no,
we can move on to board business. I'd entertain a motion to approve the Whiskey Creek Estates plat map.
So moved, yeah.
Second.
And all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries 3-0. And moving on to 4B, matters from commissioners.
There will be an article in today's newspaper regarding my thoughts that I think out loud about the sales tax. I was quite taken aback by it. It's going to have some political baggage along with it because I know the Courier will not spin it towards me in the right direction. But then again,
did they interview you for it?
Beg your pardon?
Did they interview you for it?
I interviewed with Sean Hall last night because I wanted the information to be accurate.
Okay.
And then after I got home, I thought to myself, you know what? Maybe this is the right time for that to pop up, just strictly because it shows that we're thinking beyond. We've got a problem coming up in a couple of years that people say, well, what are you going to do without a levy? What are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about that? At least we're kicking out some stuff. Rob Bovette told me this morning, he goes, you know what? He's on a scale of all over the state. You know, you're 2 for 2 on coming up with stuff. Where are the other people? So yeah. it's just our way of thinking. I think my reservation is, and I'm fixing that as we speak, when it comes out, it's going to list Coos, Curry, Jackson, Josephine, Douglas, and Klamath. I haven't been able to talk to Klamath. I talked to Donnie Boyd about it, Commissioner Boyd about it a little bit. Nothing at Douglas, nothing at Jackson. So this morning I'm scrambling on letting them
getting
know
hold of these groups.
That these were just my thinking out loud, and I'm not telling them what they should do.
Yeah.
But this is a long process going forward with a lot of thought and a lot of discussion going forward because it would have to be all for one and one for all. There could be a deviation from those six counties. But Mr. Bovette said probably a good idea to bring it up maybe at the district meeting, maybe at AOC, you know, a couple of different ideas, but we'll talk about that or, I'll mull it over. But I'm making sure that I talked to Court Boyce this morning. He's aware of what's going to drop, how the ball is going to drop. I'm going to get a hold of Commissioner Sweet as soon as we get down here. And also I've got a call in to Tim Freeman, who is in budget all day. And I've talked to John Stosser this morning. He was going into an admin. Bob Stosser, excuse me. And I sent him an email with the thoughts out loud as to what it meant. And that I was in no way to make sure that Danny Jordan, I am not speaking for Jackson County. I'm not trying to convince them of anything. This is just me thinking out loud. But maybe it's kind of good that this thing will be out in the open, but I do anticipate TV stations and Bill Myers wanting to do an interview. Maybe this is a time to just roll it out a little bit, kind of see what's going on. We got a year and a half before the 2020 election, and that may be where it pops up. It's hard to say. A lot of talking, a lot of discussion between now and then, but I will absolutely take a whipping on this one, but I'm ready for it. I took a whipping on the one in City Grand Path, and I took a whipping on the levy, and I took a whipping on the marijuana thing. I'll do it again.
When I speak of your strengths, you seeing big picture out of the box ideas is one of the things I see as a strength in you. Does it necessarily mean they always come to fruition? No, but you think and see things in a way that not everybody does. And one of the things I like about our board right now is that we all see things from different perspectives. And as much as everybody would like to group us into one box, we are most definitely not one box.
No.
And, it's kind of one of those things that I think we're all needed at the table. And so I am sorry that you're going to get a beating, but I appreciate, and I'm waiting for your next idea.
And I'm probably,
tip of the spear. You
know, when I got home, when I was sitting there having a glass of lemonade, watching Jeopardy, I thought to myself, you know what? I don't need this job. You know, I'm probably the only one that doesn't really need this job. If I lost it tomorrow, it wouldn't matter. I don't have a career. You're not going to ruin my career. So I'm the perfect person to send this message out because you can't hurt me. I mean, what am I going to do, go back to building hot rods? I'd love to do that. I'd make more money at it anyway. But so I'm the one that I don't mind putting my head in the chocks out here and letting people throw tomatoes at me because it can't hurt me. I'm in a position in my life when I can end your career. I go, that's funny. I've already ended my career 4 years ago. This is entertainment to me. and I enjoy the job. It's
public service as well, sir.
It is. It's public service, and I really enjoy it.
Well, but you go to bat for people. You do listen to people's needs, and you're a problem solver. So, for that. So, are there other items?
No, not from me.
Well, and Josephine County is used to being the tip of the spear on quite a few things.
That's true.
And then all in between any levy vote or election, all we hear is, why isn't government thinking of new ideas to not tax the property owner? And so here we are with our second tough idea to roll out because you asked for it. Here's another way it could happen. What do you guys think? Not, this is, I'm going to die on this hill. That's not you. It's like, hey, I got an idea. What do you guys think? And I think that's an intelligent way to go forward. And especially when it's not wrapped up in a campaign or a vote, right. When it's just an open discussion.
Maybe the timing is right, Jeff.
Yeah. So I like that. I want to gently correct the courier on facts. He was sitting in here the other day when we talked about the future of Beacon Drive and having the engineering done this fall and the project next summer. And he wrote in the paper, hey, it's going to be done this summer. And I'm like, no, it's not. It was... So I just want to correct that they were going to do engineering this year and let it go for the full season next year so we can get the best bids possible.
Well, I talked to Sean Hall last night, and I said one of the things that's very troublesome from my desk is that in a way when the media tries to stick a hole in the boat before it's even launched, they are actually... depriving the public of their voice on a subject. When we bring something, when we refer something to the voter, we're referring it to the voter. We can't do anything on these revenue issues, these tax issues, unless it goes to the voter. We want their way in is the final one. And if you torpedo it before it gets an opportunity for us to put it on the ballot, or you ridicule us for putting it on the ballot, chastise us for putting it on the ballot, that bothers me in principle, because everything, I wish everything could go to the people. And when they, like I said, poke a hole in the boat before it's even launched, you're depriving those people of their weigh-in as to whether or not thumbs up, thumbs down. I don't like it. Look what we did with the sales tax over at the city of Grants Pass. I'd had a lot of things that was probably wrong about it, but we still sent it to the voter, and it came back overwhelmingly no, because sales tax has a negative spin to it. But I call it what it is, and I'm willing to call it what it is, because when I explain it to groups that I'm around, they absolutely not. And then when you explain what how it would roll out, they go, you know what, I could get behind that. It's got a lot of features and benefits that are not on the surface when you say sales tax. So this is give time, and I just, like I say, I just want to apologize because this is not the way I wanted it rolled out. I would rather have had time to go to all five or six counties that would be involved in it to get some solidarity and some buy-in on it and some feedback from them, but it's not going to be that way. So I'm making sure that I don't burn any bridges with our neighboring counties.
Yeah, and you've identified it. The same concern I have with our local newspaper, and my example is the River Road Reserve. They keep trying to frame the conversation in any light they want without letting the community have an intelligent discussion about the future. We want to put everything on the table, talk about it, let everybody decide, have their input, and then come up with a plan of what to do with it. But they want to take their opinion first and take the most negative view possible and put that out there first to frame the conversation, which is not reporting, that is opinion. And it is not on the opinion page, it is on the front page. And so we're going to continue with this struggle as the Courier strives for relevancy, as their numbers go down, and people stop reading because they are not reporting. They are trying to frame the story. And it's uncomfortable and shouldn't be the way that it works. And so it's become very frustrating for me as a public figure to try and talk about half-baked ideas that are really, truly half-baked. And I just want to present, like you do, as an idea, and they think that you're you're ready to die on this hill, and it's the only way to go in the future. And it's like, no, I just want to talk about it. Yeah. And so hopefully Sean will listen to this.
I have a list for you guys when I want to make sure that I don't cut you off, though.
No, I think we're done with our discussion of local politics.
I'm out of soap.
Awesome.
Box is empty.
First off, yesterday's fire suppression meeting went well. We're fully in fire season early, essentially. They used the super tanker yesterday on a fire in Lapine that took out a house.
Wow.
And yesterday was the six-month anniversary of Paradise, California.
Did they get the fire put out over Chiloquin?
I think it's contained, but not out yet.
Yeah,
is what I heard.
I saw that one, and I saw smoke still.
One and one.
But they also had a controlled. They had a controlled burn as well.
Baby,
I think so.
Yeah, there's a few going over there, but I mean, it's traditionally this is the time of year that kind of neck of the woods starts burning.
Yeah, the grass gets dry.
But we've had a lot locally too, and so there's been local Ivy fires put out a please stop. ODF did. Rural Metro reiterated it. I'm hosting the next fire suppression committee. They're not open to the public, but it is, I'm glad the first meeting was supposed to be in Southern Oregon. It was in Springfield. So I've teased them an ending that is not Southern
not
Oregon.
Not Southern Oregon.
I just want to respond because what I read in the paper was, you know, while I was gone, that you know, it's, you know, just protect your house, and we can't do anything else other than protect your house. I go back to, it's not just the house that you lose the value. I go to a friend of mine that had 80 acres up Pickett Creek, and because that was part of the Taylor Creek fire that was not put out, it burned all of his 80 acres except for 100 yards around his house that he protected. They
Correct.
Ordered him out of his house, and he said, over my dead body, because he had the equipment and the water storage, and he said, stay here and protect my home because you're not going to. And he said, oh, we can do it. And they said, you have burned 78 acres of my property, and I'm not going to let you take the rest of it. So
right.
I realize that people should be responsible for around them, but I still take it back to the people that are trained and paid to put out fires, not fight fires, but put them out. And I think they're missing that. I think they kind of say, well, we'll kind of let it burn over to the road. And that's like Commissioner Morgan said last year, you put this big box around it and say, we'll let it burn to there. But when it jumps the Illinois River again, that they were going to use for natural fire break, we didn't know that would happen. So I get frustrated with it. It's not just the structure. This guy's land now, which was timber and everything else, is gone. It is absolutely useless, and we're going to buy that moose gate.
So it used to be, for over 40 years, I was talking to an employee of BLM that retired. He said, for over 40 years, when we would harvest, we would build in a fire break along the ridgeline intentionally, and you would have intentional fire lines and fire breaks, and they've stopped doing
Good
that. One of the biggest topics of importance we brought up yesterday was those streets, as our advisory board said, keeping those road access. The thing we did last night on the NEPA response on not tearing up the roads, but those fire breaks and having those conversations. So I totally agree. I'm doing a tour this afternoon with another Forest Service person or former retired one that wants to show me something different, but I don't think there's a day that goes by I'm not having fire-related meetings. Real quick, Friday there is a BRNE breakfast. Sorry, there's a gnat flying in my face. I promise I showered. I don't know. It is lodging and tourism and different stuff at the BRNE, which is Business Retention Expansion with the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, that's usually something I would attend.
And it requires an RSVP. So I would recommend that if you're able to go, I know that I'm trying to... Okay, hold on. I found it again. I just switched emails. It's done by 9:30. I know we have our meeting here at 9, but it's called an Industry Breakfast Hospitality Edition. And with the lodging question on the ballot, it might be beneficial for someone to go. The program goes from 8 to 9:30. It's at Tap Rock. It is a $15 per person with a RSVP required if somebody wants to go. You're our designee for the chamber.
Yeah.
But I wanted to bring it up because I get the newsletters
Right, and I was planning on going. I did see that one had a $15 fee or something. Is that what you're referencing?
Yeah, but there's also a link for an RSVP. So I don't know when you have to RSVP by. But I will forward out to you and Nicole so you can follow up.
Yep. Okay, me and Nicole? Okay.
Separately, I don't think any of us are able to attend, but the Kirbyville Museum is celebrating their 60th birthday on May 18th.
Yeah.
And Nicole had mentioned maybe doing a proclamation or a resolution. I would recommend just a letter of acknowledgement.
Yeah, signed by all three, I think,
yeah,
is okay. Congratulations.
If you guys would support that.
You know, absolutely. It came up, I support that, but it came up the other day in a conversation. You know, we were talking about the Selma School and the community center and whatnot. I said, what's going on with the Kirby Museum? Because we own that, I think. Who owns that?
I don't know.
I know
I can ask.
Years ago, the county used to own it because we put the air conditioning and stuff on it. But I don't know if it's that one of our buildings. Yes, I checked with Ryan Johnson. I don't know what's
or
in there.
Helene.
I don't know if there's full artifacts still.
It's got quite a few from what I've seen. But
nice facility.
It'd be nice to know.
It would be nice to know. And separately, just as a point of information, so ready has highlighted Boatnik coming up for us in their newsletter, but there also is the Rogue Adventure annual meeting is June 27th at 5 p.m. in Ashland. And so I didn't know if one or all of us would want to go to that, but I want to just put it on your radars.
What's that one again?
So Reddy's annual meeting.
Oh, annual meeting.
They usually highlight their board, certain businesses that are doing stuff, and they have a dinner. It's not a required to go to, but it's a. They just have an annual meeting.
And
so
I'd volunteer to go for sure.
Yeah, I've gone in the past. Do you ever go to those?
Yes.
I
yield.
Okay.
Yield to Darren.
Sounds good.
Enjoy.
So
you bet I will.
Despite the claims to the obvious that I haven't even asked questions about us having an aerial aviation program, I reached out to CIS Insurance, our insurance carrier. They will not insure airports or
airplanes. Or helicopters.
Our current airports are insured through a separate rider through Lloyd's of London. We had to get special insurance for our airports. I asked Larry to find out what that would be. I also asked about other insurance for the program, and they said, we can't even guess what your workers' comp would be.
Well,
so
pretty high.
Yeah.
More than a life expectancy thing, you know.
And I also had reached out to our senator's office just trying to find out. I was told by Oregon State, ODF, that the county was not eligible to receive aircraft. The state is eligible, but the county is not. Again, trying not to, with every process of this, I've asked for more information. I don't want to take your word for it. Show me where. Show me, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I emailed the person in San Francisco, but I'm having issues that's over the program. So I'm trying to just still follow up to see if there's any merit to or a possibility of. I'm trying to make sure we have answers. So I wanted you to know I was still.
Yeah, thank you for following up on that.
Can you ask your question? For instance, on the single-seater attack planes, could somebody like HB Company or Grayback, a private entity, could they put those planes in there and operate those out of one of our airports?
Mm-hmm.
Private sector.
Well, the other side of it is ODF is part of our suppression committee was looking at where else do we need to stage aircraft. And I offered our IV airport.
Mm-hmm.
And they
but
said
that's
going to be part of our request to the state in the governor's report.
That's a good
I don't
deal.
Want them to say, well, we're going to put a big bomber out there
so,
that takes 2.5 hours to get it in the air.
No.
The little single-seaters, you could, until the bomber is on site,
I hear you.
You could pump.
They don't. Here's the thing. Did you know that ODF doesn't own any aircraft? They own one statewide.
Well, I don't know about that. It's all private sector.
Every bit of their air response is contracted out.
Contract.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. And Jack Erickson builds them over there in Madrid.
And not only, well, and we have Erickson here that has to go through their processing and all that kind of stuff to get certified as well. But nonetheless, there are no counties that do this.
Right.
And even with, so there is a possibility. If through the military program, you never own it. You acquire it, you put all the maintenance and effort into it, you keep it running and all that other kind of stuff, and when it's done, it goes back. You never own it, so all that money you've invested is just on a loaned. It's kind of like, taking out a leased vehicle and then putting maintenance into it and souping it up with all this extra stuff and then giving it back.
Putting a nice airfoil on the back.
Exactly. So,
don't want to maintain a helicopter. It is extremely expensive.
We'll have Laura Glover do it.
Yeah. Right. So, but as far as there's different ways of acquiring through auction, through different things. So I'm trying to look into all of that, and it just takes time to get feedback back. Yeah, and but I've also been told that military craft does not allow any passengers. And generally speaking, what one of the U.S. Forest Service incident commanders was telling me, he says, general speaking, is you don't want to send a bucket just dumping water if you don't have people on the ground doing something as well. So you take that helicopter and you send the crew and you drop them with the bucket folded up. And then the crew gets out, the bucket gets dropped, you go find a water source nearby, you dump it, and that crew's working to try to put the fire out. With the helicopters that would be acquired through this program, no passengers are allowed. So you would almost need a second vehicle or something to be able to get the personnel in there.
Typical government, while the fire burns on, they've got all these things you got to do. So
that's only military. The military surplus, right? Military surplus puts restrictions on what can be done how.
I'm very interested in the single-seater aircraft, like two of them out of Illinois Valley, who could have gotten on that fire and it dumps 800 to 900 gallons a time and an 11-minute turnaround. We will have a place for them to fill up out of that pond out there. I would love to see them get on that while the Forest Service is calling for
the any contractor
venue.
Can, I mean, our base is used as staging every fire season. They have planes staged out there. So if there's somebody that has a contract, they can work with Larry and do that. It doesn't require our...
Well, that may be something we ought to bring up to Greyback Forestry or HB Company.
Well, Mike Wheelock's in my meeting. He's on the committee I'm on.
Okay.
So
that's good.
Grayback's doing stuff already. They were, they're all that kind of stuff. But ODF is going to be asking for more air support statewide, it appears. So.
And I think I read something in the newspaper, but I don't know if it's a policy going forward that that since they have contracts with HB and Grayback, can they put patrols in the forest when a storm is coming and not have to dispatch from their home bases?
The dispatch is fixed. They already moved groups up and out into the forest last year. They just ran out of crews.
That's what I think I read. Okay. And with 120 fires, that's going to happen. Okay. I got something else if that's resolved itself.
Yeah. Let's see. I have one other thing I wanted to ask on my list, and Senators Merkley and Wyden are proposing a 60,000-acre expansion of the wilderness area on our Rogue, and I would ask for support in having a letter or resolution drafted to respond.
Yeah, respond to that.
I had a brainstorm the other day. I'm in favor of that, by the way. I brainstormed the other day, and we were talking about this. Well, they never listened to us in Washington. And I said, they're never going to listen to you in Washington, because why? And everybody in Washington, to the other 98 senators, to me, Merkley and Wyden, they will never respond to anything that we want here. It's always thumbs down, and they just go on and do it anyway. Why are we even bothering with Merkley and Wyden? Why aren't we campaigning? Why aren't we lobbying the other 98 senators? The other 98 senators are all Republican. But if you ask a Republican senator in Virginia, just say, what about Oregon? You go, that would be write that off. Anything they want. We're not even interested in listening to them because they voted against us. Oregon is a completely Democrat state, and they don't do that. So I would like to see us have every correspondence that we have from here, from anywhere in Oregon, Todd Nash, from Mark Owens, anybody. We should include a map that shows how the districts voted in the last presidential election. That shows the little bitty blues up here, a little bitty blue over here, a little bitty blue over here, and the rest of the whole state is red. and then mark on that map to say this is where I'm calling from, Southern Oregon. And you will see then that Republicans you look at said they're all red there. Why am I not backing them up? Why am I not listening to my people? They're being outshouted by the little people up here in this top square. I think if we demonstrate to them, they would think, you know what, they're not on our side. But yes, we are on their side. We just don't get credit for it. They don't even recognize. They look at Oregon and say, well, I know the governor. I'm no way, no how am I going to give Oregon anything. Why in the world should they do anything from Oregon when Oregon does nothing, in perception, does nothing but bash what's going on in the red part of the capital? So if we can demonstrate that to them, I think it might be a head turn. It certainly wouldn't hurt. It's just a map you can put in with every one of them, every correspondence. This is what part of Oregon I'm talking about.
Do you have the map?
That's a good point, Dan.
Absolutely. I'll get that map because okay. I brought that up to Mackenzie up there the first time we went up to our conference when we were.
Oh,
left.
She's got to be neutral on that one though.
Well, and she said, I said before. Your presenter presents to the group, would you show them a map to show them how many red people are out in the audience versus blue people? Because they're all from the blue part of Oregon, and they look down their nose at the rest of us red people, but we outnumber them.
No, we don't outnumber them.
Right.
But geographically outnumber them.
Geographically outnumber
them.
Yeah.
But county-wise, we do outnumber them. So they only have
right.
three.
If we only had a state electoral college.
Correct. But I think that it is. I think it would have some value. I'll get that map, and I think it'd be valuable.
So I love those maps.
Talking to somebody back there, and they go, you know what? My people are really out there, and I'm not listening to them. They're not from my state.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, on a much lighter note, the IV debate team is having a spaghetti feed tomorrow night, 5:30 at the high school. So if you have time, go support them. Also tomorrow at noon is Barbara Rodriguez's, I can't say that last name very
Rodriguez.
Well.
Rodriguez?
Thank you.
Is having
her retirement and or going away party. And she has been an extremely valuable member of the airport team that has gotten us from where we were to where we are and where we hope to go. And she will really be missed. I'm glad they found someone to replace her. And that she was willing to be a strong overlap and help that new person out and not just walk away. And that's the way to finish well. So I'm really happy that we had the pleasure of her services and really sad to see her go at the same time.
They're moving down to somewhere, I think.
Arizona or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
They're going to pickleball.
Pickleball heaven.
Go
to where the national championships are so we can be there.
So on one other note, just a reminder, I'll be at WIR next week. While you were gone, I tried to get him to go and he nominated me to go.
I made her go.
I'm surprised I didn't get it nominated because I wasn't here. That's usually how that
it was
goes.
Close.
I tried for months. I was trying to get you to go.
And I don't know if we've even talked about it, but the parade grand marshal for this year for the Boatnik is Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
She told me she was coming.
Yeah,
that is so great.
She's excited about it. I saw her Thursday.
I'm excited.
When she was here, she mentioned that she'd been to Paravolta. I said, you've been to Boatnik?
Yeah, we did right out there.
Said, well, you know what? You want to see what a celebration about. And Matt Galley
good
said,
job.
You know what? Matt Galley says, why don't we put her in there? Why don't we ask her if she'd be the parade grand marshal? She's excited to do it.
She is. So I saw her.
Where did you see?
So
you know
cool.
how many people, you know how many people kind of slight the boat nymph parade and tell you, get on that float, as we've done many times, and go, holy crap, where do these people come from?
There are so many.
All the way through to the bridge.
Don't you got a convertible?
Beg your pardon?
Don't you have a convertible?
I don't know what the boat nymph's going to put up for. They usually boat
nymph. Do you have a convertible?
Yes, I do.
So you should drive and we should ride.
No, I have a Corvette. Darren drove in it one time because there's only one seat. It's a one seater. It's two seats.
Well, two. Yeah.
Well, you put a
one
blanket
passenger.
On the back.
Yeah,
and
sit on the back. Yeah. that back deck, if it cracks, it's fiberglass. If that back deck cracks, it is extremely expensive.
Yeah, I won't sit on your car. Yeah. So I should tell you that I went to Salem on Thursday for the Justice Day at the Capitol. We spoke with multiples, and I got to meet with individually outside of it, I also met separately with Senator Bertschinger and Representative Wilson and Representative Stark. So then met with other folks and talking to that, but I ran into the Chief Justice while I was there. She remembered from meeting down here and was so excited. "I'm coming to your boat, Nick," she said. She was excited.
Yes, he's pumped.
And
that's really cool.
And then that night, so 2 years ago, the governor hosted Women in Elected Office reception at the governor's house. And it was one of those things that she decided to do it this year, too, and she expanded it to city councilors and mayors. So over 600 women from around the state were invited. And so it went. There weren't as many commissioners this time, but it's kind of one of those things that if the governor invites you, you go. And
right.
We continue to need to be at the table to make sure our voice is being heard. So I went to leave to drive back home, and I went to say my goodbyes, and she looked at me and she goes, "What is happening in Josephine County?" And she literally was like that. I mean, she was excited and pointed at me, and she goes, "You guys, what are you doing? It's so much in Dutch Bros and all this kind of stuff." So, you know what? We're at a time that's kind of exciting to see what's going on. And so the governor's taken notice in a positive way. I'm proud of the leadership we have at the state. I think they're showing solidarity. I just think it was a good, productive day. So.
Sounds like it. And we are a county on the rise, and Grants Pass is a city on the rise.
Cape Junction's
taking advantage of that.
Going too.
We're coming out of financially what the rest of the counties are now planning into.
Heading toward.
So
yep. They'll be asking questions.
Okay.
I ran into the lady from the courts after Chief Justice was in the office, and she says, "I don't know what you did to her. Boy, she came up there. What? I've been down at the commission of what a ball." She, you know, we were pretty lighthearted down there. But I think she welcomed.
She did. And like I said, she was all smiles when she saw me on Thursday and was excited.
That's very cool. I had her autograph her bio.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
All right. Is there anything else?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Then I will adjourn us at 10:28.